Hey all, welcome back to the Real Life Pharmacology Podcast. I'm your host, pharmacist Eric Christensen. You can track me down on LinkedIn. You can also find me at reallifepharmacology.com or meded101.com and hit the contact button there. And you can shoot me an email if you've got any questions, concerns, looking for more information there. I try to respond to all the emails I get. I definitely do. So you can find me there. With that, let's get into it today. I'm covering acyclovir. Brand name of this medication is Zovirax, and I'm really going to focus primarily on the oral dosage form here. Comes as IV as well. I guess systemic drug in systemic circulation rather than the topical acyclovir. So that's going to be my primary focus here. So first off, getting into that mechanism of action, how does this drug work? Well, you got to remember that it's used for viral infections, and it's only used for certain viral infections, okay? So, you know, your common head cold, influenza, those type of viral infections, this drug does not get used for that. So it's important to remember that. The primary uses I'll talk about after the mechanism here. But how this drug works, it's actually transformed from its original state by the virus's own thymidine kinase, and it gets converted to acyclovir monophosphate, and it continues to have phosphates added, phosphate groups added to the drug until it becomes acyclovir triphosphate. And that's really the active component that prevents, blocks that DNA production that the virus needs to continue to grow and replicate. So acyclovir triphosphate is the component that's going to block that DNA production, and it does by competing, fighting against deoxyguanosine triphosphate, which is necessary for continued growth and replication. And when it competes with that, it takes the place of that deoxyguanosine triphosphate, and it gets incorporated into viral DNA. As you could imagine, this really upsets how the virus continues to grow and replicate. So that's how it has its antiviral effects, if you will. Now, those indications, I talked about the drug not being good for every possible viral infection. The primary uses for this agent is herpes, so herpes simplex, often referred to as genital herpes. They can occur elsewhere, but that's one of the main indications for this medication. Also, in the event of a shingles flare, shingles outbreak for a patient, so that's herpes zoster. Chickenpox, in significant severe cases, it can also be used for management of that, and that's varicella is the more formal name there. So that's primarily acyclovir is going to be used for treatment. But there are certain situations, circumstances that you may see it used in prevention. So a good example, somebody that's maybe had a recurrent zoster infection where they've got recurrent shingles episodes or recurrent herpes simplex episodes, and maybe that patient is immunocompromised, for example. That immune system can't stop those infections, can't prevent them as well as a normal healthy individual. And that might be a situation where we use these agents more on a preventative, more routine type basis. Cytomegalovirus or CMV is another possible infection that we may try to prevent as well in immunocompromised patients. Now, I did want to mention one of the primary reasons why you probably don't see acyclovir used as much as valacyclovir is because it is dosed so frequently. So acyclovir came along, was really one of the first agents within this class of medication, And then valacyclovir came along and had a little added benefit that you didn't have to dose it quite as frequently. So with that dosing, acyclovir is generally dosed up to 5 times per day. So I preach this to students, to others that I teach. You've got to remember the more times that you give a dose to the patient, the likelihood that they miss those doses, it just seems to go up and up and up. So 5-time-a-day dosing, you can imagine that's not very conducive for, you know, work, life, schedule, balance, and getting those doses in. So why does it need to be dosed 5 times per day? Well, one, it is poorly absorbed in higher doses. So the more you escalate that dose, the more you give it all at once, the worse off your absorption is going to be. It's absorbed a little bit better if we give it in smaller multiple doses. So that's one reason. Probably the biggest reason, or one bigger reason, it's got a short half-life. So this drug doesn't hang around in the body very often before it's cleared out of the body. So particularly in patients with normal kidney function. You know, half-life, again, kind of can range and vary based upon kidney function and things, but a normal, healthy adult individual, you're probably looking at about 2 to 3 hours. So again, very, very short half-life, and again, that's, you know, one of the reasons, big reasons, along with that absorption issue, why we have to dose this medication so frequently. Now, I mentioned, hinted at the renal function there a little bit. It is important to remember that there are dose adjustments based upon kidney function. I'm not going to go into, you know, each individual detail here. I'm not going to take time for that. But if you know, see a patient, they've got a diagnosis of chronic kidney disease, you know, maybe stage 3, stage 4, something like that, that's an excellent patient to go double check, make sure their kidney function is okay, and make sure that dose, whatever that may be, is actually appropriate for that patient. Now let's get into adverse effects a little bit. So rarely, I would say, probably the most testable side effects that I've seen are nephrotoxicity and neurotoxicity. So in trying to prevent that nephrotoxicity, it is definitely important to make sure your patient is adequately hydrated. So important to remember that aspect. Neurotoxicity, and again, I would say both these adverse effects, neurotoxicity and nephrotoxicity, keep a lookout for, you know, higher doses, prolonged periods of use, where that drug can maybe accumulate and get to higher concentrations. Now, with neurotoxicity, okay, so what does that mean? What exactly are you going to see? And there is potential for delirium-type symptoms, you know, sedation, agitation, confusion, things of that nature. But again, very, very rare, I would say. I do have a potential case of acyclovir neurotoxicity on MedEd 101. So if you just go Google search acyclovir neurotoxicity, MedEd 101, you should see that potential case posted there. So that was a great guest post I had from another pharmacist there. So certainly can happen. Be aware of it. And particularly in those patients maybe with poor renal function, where those concentrations can really accumulate, as well as those patients maybe on higher doses, for example. So nephrotoxicity, neurotoxicity are probably not incredibly common, but I will say the most common adverse effects listed are going to be GI adverse effects, and, you know, potentially some fatigue and things of that nature. So those are going to be most common. You know, usually they're not, you know, going to prevent you from continuing to take the drug if it's necessary for, you know, 5 days or 7 days or whatever time period the patient's taking that medication. You know, if you've got somebody on it for prophylaxis and they've got to take it every day, or, you know, they're taking it obviously for a long period of time, you know, GI adverse effects, that can be really problematic if they don't subside over time. So, again, it kind of depends upon the perspective and how much we're going to battle through some of those adverse effects, again, in the odd chance that they occur. Rarely, some LFT issues can happen. Rarely, some hematologic, immunologic issues can happen. So CBC, neutrophils, platelets, LFTs, obviously creatinine and BUN. We're going to take a look at that as well, potentially, if we are noticing issues and or if we're going to give this medication longer term, or if, you know, maybe you've got a patient at risk for some of these issues to happen. Maybe they're already, have pre-existing liver disease. Maybe they already have elevated liver enzymes for some reason. Again, just kind of looking, doing some of that clinical assessment with the patient and determining maybe what you're going to monitor there and track. Again, factored in with how long, what dose, and all that sort of stuff too. So that's a little bit about adverse effects and monitoring parameters. When we get back from break here, let's finish up on drug interactions. If you're a pharmacist in the market for board certification study material, NAPLEX, BCPS, BCGP, ambulatory care, the new MTM certification, definitely go check out meded101.com/store. If you're a nurse, med student, other healthcare professionals, we've also got a growing list of resources there. Check out some of our clinical content, case studies, books, things of that nature. That you can find at meded101.com/store, S-T-O-R-E, as well. And we frequently update that, so definitely don't hesitate to check back as we add new things there. So again, support our sponsor, meded101.com/store. That's greatly appreciated. Helps keep this podcast free and available to everyone who's looking to maybe pick up on some clinical pearls, some good medication education. Finishing up on drug interactions today, I will say in general, acyclovir, I don't think of a drug that has a tremendous amount of strong, significant drug interactions. There are some rare ones. Again, I always say, if you're not sure, go look it up. And I do not cover every single possible drug interaction. I just highlight some things of note, some things that I've seen, some things I pay attention to for sure within clinical practice there. So first off with drug interactions, I do remember the hydration status, the risk of nephropathy, renal issues there. So if we've got a patient who's dehydrated, we might be more at risk. So how does that factor in drug interactions? I definitely think about patients on diuretics, for example, and are they potentially over-diuresed? If they are, and we put them on acyclovir, we may have a little bit of more risk to run into those renal issues. Acyclovir of note is what's called a weak CYP1A2 inhibitor. So drugs that are metabolized by CYP1A2, they may go up in their concentrations in the bloodstream if we're taking agents together. So acyclovir combined with clozapine can potentially raise those clozapine concentrations. Acyclovir with tizanidine, so that's an older kind of skeletal muscle relaxant type medication, tizanidine concentrations can go up. So you might run the risk in either of those situations of seeing more signs and symptoms of clozapine toxicity and or tizanidine toxicity. A couple of HIV drugs that I did want to mention, tenofovir and zidovudine. Both those agents have potential to interact with acyclovir. And then we've also got vaccines. Remember, for some of these viral infections, so herpes zoster, varicella, we've got vaccines for those infections to prevent those infections. And just remember to double check if you're giving these vaccines close in and around the time frame that they're receiving an antiviral agent like acyclovir, be sure to keep this in mind, because that acyclovir could potentially alter the effectiveness of that vaccine. Now, in clinical practice, does that happen very often? No, it certainly does not. But remember, if you give a vaccine and you're giving an agent that potentially impacts the disease that vaccine is being used to prevent, and we're using them close to one another, that can potentially alter the response and efficacy of that vaccine. So definitely wanted to make that point with acyclovir here. And I think that's going to wrap up the podcast for today. If you enjoyed this episode or any episode, definitely leave us a rating, review on iTunes. That helps us grow the audience, get in front of more people. And I'm so appreciative to those of you. I think we're almost getting close to 200 now that have rated and reviewed the show. So I'm greatly appreciative to all of you who have taken the time and done that. If you're looking to follow the podcast as well as get a free resource, I've got a free 31-page PDF. This took me several weeks to complete this resource. It's of the top 200 drugs. And in that PDF, I actually lay out some clinical pearls from each of those agents and what's really clinically important and things you actually see on a somewhat regular basis in clinical practice. Obviously, a great resource as well if you're looking to prepare for exams, pharmacology class, things of that nature too. So go check that out, reallifepharmacology.com. Simply subscribe, and that should be emailed to you very shortly thereafter. With that being said, appreciate all the ratings and review. Take the time to do that if you haven't done so. And I am going to sign off for today. Thanks so much for listening.